You're listening to the Unsung Podcast, where we talk about classic albums and decide if they deserve that distinction. And we also talk about some unsung classics in the hopes of bringing them to a new audience. And at the end of it all, we let you decide if we are right or wrong. This is the Unsung Podcast. Welcome to our first fucking mixtape.
Yeah, I like this. I'm happy.
I like this idea, yeah.
Waka waka waka. So do you want to explain a little bit about what it is?
Well, I'll first introduce myself.
Oh yeah, hi.
Who are you?
Hi, my name is Mark
Chino Marino.
And I am Chino Marino's doppelganger.
You're half a Chino Marino's doppelganger.
I'm half, yeah, probably.
And I'm the fat half.
Not only am I half of Chino Marino's doppelganger, but I'm also joined by two men who like blow just as much as he does.
To my right is the bassist from Mushroomhead. It's Chris Cusack.
Prove it's not.
You'll never
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
To my left is Dave Weaver, who's got his black hoodie hood up in special celebration of
black hoodie hood.
Yeah, you do.
Oh yeah,
you've got a black hoodie and the hood's up.
Yeah, that's right.
He's
yeah.
new era committed.
Yeah, uh-huh. but he's getting himself into that, you know, method acting kind of mind space to engage with the subject of today's mixtape, which is new metal.
New metal.
Volume yeah. one, I suspect.
Volume one, yeah.
So, yeah, explain exactly how this is going to work, please, somebody. Mark?
Okay, each of us have chosen the new metal record.
Well... chosen. Some have been forced Hoisted. Into it. I mean, you, Chris, have like tried to get out of this and tried to squeeze your way and gone, oh, I'll choose this one. I remember it being good. And then I fucking hate it. I'll do another one. Whereas me, I'm like, I've got about 12 I want to put in.
12
basically, we're all going,
conservative.
We're going to bring forward an album each. And then at the end, you can vote for which one should go in.
Yeah.
I was going to say if any, but one has to go in.
I don't
unless
know.
Nobody votes. this, like, I don't want no way to vote. But,
I
you
see
know.
This backfiring dramatically in this episode.
But yeah, we will have a new metal record in the discography by the end of this episode.
So let's... you
now, no, there are some caveats here. We need to explain nu metal and what's not getting included.
Right.
So a lot of people go, oh, Deftones, White Pony. But no, we're not including Deftones as...
As
new
they're
metal.
Really, really good. And we're
yeah, exactly.
going to probably do an episode on one of their records yeah. at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think White Pony is a fucking classic. And yeah, they were lumped in with nu metal. And maybe the first two records, especially the first album, has nu metal bits to it. But as a band, they're way beyond the genre.
Way more diverse. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think we all agree that we don't need to bring them into this.
Yeah, and I also don't think the label nu metal necessarily does them any favours. Put it
yeah.
that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's bands like Faith No More and Rage Against the Machine who are...
responsible for nu metal.
But yeah. are not nu metal bands.
Tool as well, yeah. that's been mentioned yeah. as a band that could...
There's all kinds of names getting thrown about. That
but I mean, we're talking about...
Glassjaw are not nu metal.
Glassjaw were never nu metal.
Nah, they were. Yeah. They're a fucking yeah. hardcore band.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about shit new metal, basically. You know, fucking baggy jeans and kappa.
The stuff that clogged up the arteries of the world
dreadlocks.
For what, 5 years?
The first Korn album came out in 1994.
94.
So, like, probably almost 10 years.
I know,
94?
But...
Yeah.
First Korn album was 94, but...
First Deftones album was 96.
The peak of new metal was around between 98 and 2002, 2003, maybe.
Yeah.
And like it really hit that the commercial peak was Hot Dog chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavoured water. I couldn't remember the name of it. By Limp Bizkit and Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park.
And it was when Killswitch Engage became a big thing that new metal started to die because guitarist decided I actually wanted to learn how to play guitar.
Yeah, and I wanted to split my fingers up from rather than just doing this drop D. Yeah, exactly.
So that's one of the caveats. I guess the other caveat is we won't be talking about every new metal record because there's quite a lot of them.
And but we might drop it in and out.
We have the one person in the room that could talk about every new metal record in David.
Yep. I mean, yeah, there's so many bad records in there.
But
what's unbelievable about it is going back and looking at like the videos of bands of like Spineshank and Dry Kill Logic. And like, and seeing the budgets that were thrown at them for singles and production. It's absolutely fucking mental.
All the major labels as well. They're like Roadrunner, Sony, Epic. They all got signed up.
Money checked at them. People went to see them for a couple of years, and then the three riffs that they had got, you know, pretty boring eventually.
The three Pantera riffs that they had, kind of.
Yeah, that they sort of turned the mid up on.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Cold Chamber tried to make a Scary Milkman a thing?
Cold Chamber were like one of those original new metal bands that were like went around with Korn and Limp Bizkit and everything, but like time has not been kind to them.
Yeah, they like, basically sound you like Korn.
You can go back and you can even listen to like Limp Bizkit and see, you know, the high points of what they did, and you know, and there's a lot of hidden good stuff in a lot of this new metal. But Cold Chamber were just a bad band. Yeah. They were really shit. Like, really shit. Like, terrible.
Me loco. Me loco.
Yeah, just really, really bad.
They're a band that would never have happened if there wasn't a delirium around at the time. Like, they would have been treated with the disdain they deserved. But like Dave says, there was so much money being split. I mean, that was the last gasp of the industry in terms of spending power at that point as well. You still had sales. You know, you still had like I think like Hybrid Theory sold millions.
40 million, I think. It's like one of the highest selling albums of all time.
Yeah, and it was the biggest selling album of that year, you know, including people like Britney Spears and all that kind of stuff. It was the biggest selling album of that year. So it's like, it's pretty amazing that there was such a quick drop off in record sales, but there was still revenue kicking about then. Too much revenue from the sounds of it. But yeah, so many bands that should never have ever been allowed into the club.
There is an upside though. There are some actually genuinely interesting bands that made their way onto major labels who were not new metal bands.
Deftones might never have made it.
Yeah, and also let's not forget like the Opeth. They're not a new metal band by any stretch of the imagination.
But they got signed
to a major label.
Yeah.
Because of this. And there's another really famous black metal band who I can't remember the name of. They also got signed to a major label.
Oh, probably Dimmu Borgir, maybe.
No, it was. Was it Satyricon?
Satyricon.
They got signed to a major label. I'm pretty sure they did as well.
Yeah.
Off the back of this. And then
metal as a genre, like a commercial viability.
Gave it fucking clownishness as well, though. Totally. I think that's where the backlash came from. It was like the fucking clownishness of it. One of the bands that we never established whether or not they were eligible are probably a great case study for this is Insane Clown Posse. You honk your horn and say fuck you. Now what the fuck does that do? You feel better now? I didn't let you pass. How about I stop my car and beat your fucking ass? How many times will my neighbor beat his wife? Oh yeah, we never talk about that.
We never talk about Insane Clown Posse.
The Juggalos, that whole gormless American sort of Midwest white working class thing, like, and that carried over here, the wife beater shirts, the white trash thing, even the fact that Eminem was really big in the metal clubs and stuff. There was a real like fetishization of white trash during
Kid Rock. He was defining that. Like, that first Kid Rock record.
WWE.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you look back in that and it's
but like, it was working class American music, a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was.
But also a lot of it.
But
it was
also pandering to the lowest common denominator and some low instincts in people. You know, it was like there was some really shitty misogyny kicking about in that scene.
Yeah.
You know, and
the video for Nookie.
You know, yeah, video for Nuki, just Limp Bizkit, yeah, overall.
Generally, yeah.
Head Planet Earth as well. Like, I remember I had a pal gave me like a couple of Head Planet Earth albums in uni. So this was in like 2005. And I was like, fuck, they're still going. And I listened to them. I was like, this is really bad. But it was like well produced and they had like some decent riffs, but it was just like, oh, I want you to be my fucking stripper motherfucker. Blah, blah. I was like, oh, yeah, they are still teenage boys and they have not learned.
And
yeah,
they still based on our Facebook page. We're quite good, according to some commentators.
Going to drop some unsung trivia here. The first time we ever recorded a podcast was the same night as the Slane Clown Posse were playing in Glasgow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And wow, the clientele was awesome. It was Scotland trying to be like South Carolina. It was
but
really
But Slane Clown Posse, have they not like recently sort of distanced themselves from the alt-right? Because they got lumped in somehow and then they were like, no, we're not part of that. So like,
I really want to get into that.
White
because
Christian.
They've accidentally become like slightly, you know, lefty it's, figureheads, it's but not they're just obviously not.
That, this is a weird thing, right? So another kind of cultural phenomenon of the new metal thing, there was like a fake wokeness to it, right? Mm-hmm. So there was like some of the better bands on the spectrum, bands like System of a Down, had a political aspect to their music. They were one of the few ones that did. Others threw in these token references to, you know, George Bush or, you know, just cliched, glib kind of political observations. But in amongst all that, I mean, bearing in mind, new metal was at its height when September 11th happened, and there was a really strange political fallout within the scene.
I was going to mention that, but I think that might have actually been the point. I think for some reason, I don't know how I'm going to put evidence behind this, I'm just speaking out loud, but it's interesting how 9/11 happened and then the fall of new metal like was coincided almost identically.
It also coincided with the commercial peak as well, in a way, because Toxicity and Iowa were both in the charts on September the 11th.
Toxicity came out 1 week exactly before 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe Iowa was the week after. I think those two albums were like within a fortnight.
Was that almost a week before, actually?
Oh, yeah. Okay. But like, in terms of those albums, I think what they maybe did pushed that very limited genre to the fucking limits. And so System of a Down, if they then went another way and Slipknot just could have been just a metal band.
Yeah, they outgrew it.
Yeah, they'd outgrown the limits of the new metal genre. And at the same time, America and the world had kind of lost this innocence of the 90s that, you know, in a very cultural way, and that there isn't this fucking innocence to world, you know, and that's frivolity. And that's what new metal was. It was like party music. It was, you know, bro music. It was like stupid. Who gives a fuck? Yeah, it was like the ultimate culmination of the 90s and the Cold War being over and nothing mattering. Yeah. And it was kind of like
post grunge, kind of like the austerity and the sort of seriousness and the kind of genuine sort of cultural revolutionary aspects of grunge, like the LGBT movements and women's rights and things like that.
Yeah.
They were people, especially American working class people, were fucking sick of being told that they were out of order for a lot of their behaviour. And it was a chance to sort of switch off a little bit and not feel bad about themselves for a lot of these things, which was fair enough. You know, and a lot of these kids that were like getting chastised for being...
Yeah, because Pearl Jam had become really boring by then. So if you were into heavy music...
I think it started pretty boring, to be fair. But I think... The thing is, though, right, so, like Dave says, from that naivety and from that loss of innocence around... Well, I say loss of innocence, it was horrible shit happening all the time, but the cultural impact of the September 11th thing, it took that wokeness, inverted commas, in a slightly dark direction that we're really kind of seeing that playing out now as well, culturally. System of a Down are a good example, okay, because there you have a band that were singing about political things. You know, he's an Armenian heritage. He was singing about the Armenian genocide, which a lot of people still refuse to acknowledge, where, you know... The Turkish massacre, million people, way more, more than a million people. Yeah. And it's that was interesting, that was informative. But those same people started to fall prey to like the real culture of like 9/11 conspiracy theories. It started to become this counter political sort of tantrum where darker elements started to move within it. The anti-Semitism of the Illuminati and all these kind of weird things that, like, Slane Clown Posse were picking up a lot of fans who were sympathetic to that. and like System of a Down, even the guys in the band, I think at times overstepped the mark with some of their comments, and they were just engaging with ideas that maybe seemed to them like, you know, healthy skepticism.
Well, on Toxicity,
there
Charles Manson.
That. Yeah. Yeah. There's a few things on that which have troublesome views.
Yeah, exactly. And so they were starting, you were seeing the very early stages of what we're seeing now in terms of the alt-right, because the alt-right is not neo-Nazis. The alt-right are people between us, let's say, and neo-Nazis who think, oh man, I don't believe in, you know, this, but at the same time, I don't think that I shouldn't get a job because a black man should get it, or, you know, these much more moderate opinions. And unfortunately, there was a little bit of a gateway drug came out of some of the new metal stuff, including through bands like Head Planet Earth, who thought they were really woke, who thought they were really, like, you know, counterculture and revolutionary in their rhetoric. But really, they were starting to engage with ideas that, far from being far left, were actually far right. And now you've got this weird bracketing where the far left and the far right agree in an alarming amount, especially anti-Semitism, especially Illuminati and lizards and all this stupid shit. So it makes sense that people like the Insane Clown Posse did have to, even just from a business standpoint, distance themselves from those elements, because there's plenty of them in that scene, unfortunately. And it is a weird thing, because a lot of people flirt with new metal in a, God, making it sound like fucking gun crime or something, but a lot of people flirt with it in a very sort of like ironic way. And like the post that we put up on our social media got a massive reaction, and I get that. It's fun and it's funny and it's fucking hilarious.
But it's also nostalgic.
Yeah, it's nostalgic, and it reminds a lot of people of being young. But it was also pretty fucking stupid, and it also engaged with a lot of like our lesser instincts, and didn't do a lot of there were some upsides, but I think there were a lot more downsides. But
there's so many parallels with nu metal and glam metal. Like,
oh yeah, for
you
sure.
know, money was thrown at it by record labels. It was pop music, but from a done by metal bands. You know, Limp Bizkit and, you know, are basically Motley Crue, but with, you know, etc. So it's like,
you fucking remember it. Like, Hot Topic is a huge thing in America because of new metal that exists. You know, it's a countercultural cash grab. I mean, we had fucking what? We had Flip, we had Hellfire.
Yeah, yeah.
Just people that were cashing in on like stupid teens, which is basically what we were. Like, let's not fucking be around the bush here, right?
Yeah, but it was nice
we
to
be fucking part of this. And we were,
but it was fucking great to be part of that.
Yeah.
Because
attached to culture.
There was like, we were still outsiders. I was still an outsider in my school because I had my fucking corn t-shirt or whatever. But it sort of united and then commercialised the outsiders globally.
It is actually strange in hindsight how such noisy music did transition into a mainstream. Like, that is pretty crazy when you consider that Linkin Park was the number one album.
And Roland was a number one single.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
Like, Limp Bizkit were on fucking Top of the Pops
several times. That is pretty wild. I mean, and in its own way... When we spoke about this with Jonah Matranga, like, in its own way, it's kind of interesting that for a while there was a form of music in the charts that old people fucking hated again. It was like, as stupid as it was, they were like, this is just noise. And they
it was actually
Slipknot
in the top 40.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, how can you listen to this? And Slipknot were disturbing the older folk. And it's like, it was pretty interesting.
Wait and Bleed was in the charts. It's like, and it's a pop song. Like, it starts with the chorus.
I'm not trying to say there weren't interesting upsides and cultural kind of benefits from it, but I do think musically there were a lot of fucking dead ends, like a lot of really bad dead ends.
Totally.
But I think dragging the bottom.
What we'll maybe talk about now is the bands that then avoided these dead ends.
Yeah, more or less. So do you want to, will we go around the room and you can declare your vested interest?
Before we do that, there's a couple of other things I want to mention that you brought up. Like, post-grunge is very much tied in with us as well.
Yeah, so stuff like, we should talk about that. Creed and blah, blah, blah.
Puddle of Mud.
And
yeah, like, Stained. Puddle of Mud and Stained are like crossover bands even.
And then threw into Nickelback as well.
Yeah.
That was not a good groan for
I mean, people actually go and see Nickelback. Like Nickelback. And like, to
some
me,
people actually sleep with the members of Nickelback.
It's like a
Jesus.
It's like a cliche. It's like a cliche to hate Nickelback, and like maybe at some point it'll become ironic to like them again. But I'm putting my cards on the table. I fucking hated them.
I never liked them
before like they got massive. And
my
then,
sister bought Silver Side Up. and she doesn't like rock music.
Yeah, exactly. It was rock music for people that didn't like rock music. Remember that? So many people bought that record.
Remember that thing about the Manics when they started bringing out their kind of big like Australia and stuff like that? And it was rock music for people who drove BMWs and wore blue shirts and went to conferences.
I will come to your house and smother you in your sleep.
I had to. There was this. I remember there was a talent contest in my high school. And I was like the guitar player in school because it was quite a wee school. I was the most talented musician. Well, no, I wasn't at all, but I was the one that played rock guitar. For this talent contest, first of all, I played guitar for a little guy called Peter who did, can't remember, an Elvis Presley song. So I played guitar for him to do it live and he dressed as Elvis. I have no idea. He was slightly odd, but very nice boy. And then there was another little guy called Ross who had great old man hair even when he was like 12 and he was like a little chubby. He reminded me of he looked exactly like Wendell Borton from The Simpsons.
Oh, right, okay.
And he did a superb cover of How You Remind Me by Nickelback. And I had to the music teacher made me fucking play guitar to that song. And like I remember sitting in the fucking hall practicing that. I was just like, I just wanted to fucking bite my own eyes out. It was, I fucking hate that song.
That post-grunge thing, I mean, Creed as well, that was astonishing.
Yeah.
Did you notice?
Because they're still so huge as well. They're massive.
You know what I think? Like, we touched on this as well, and this is maybe just, sorry, it's another tangent. But it's interesting, given the working class connection with America, how many of these bands turned out to have like a covert Christian agenda.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Creed or POD.
Well, Creed were not covert. Creed were very overt.
And as I said, that band Taproot as well. Uh-huh. And it was like a number of these bands, I think they realised, because there's such a big market for Christian rock in America as well.
Evanescence came, they started off as a Christian rock band.
Yeah.
Do you know what's really interesting about that as well? There's a lot of metalcore bands also were the same.
Yes.
As I Lay Dying. Neil Records.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's an entire record label made up of Christian new metal, Christian metalcore bands. It's insidious.
But like As I Lay Dying, if they were 10 years younger, would have been a new metal band.
Yeah,
they
for just sure.
Uh-huh. They copied Killswitch Engage instead of copying Korn.
But one thing I need to say before we actually move on to the records, all that I want to say is that we wouldn't be here liking any of the heavy music that we like if it was not for new metal existing and being so popular.
Maybe Chris is older.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, but like, I would not have got.
This explains why I don't have these records in my collection.
I'm exactly of the generation. Like, I bought my first Kerrang because it had Korn on the cover mount CD, and I bought my first Metal Hammer because it had a Slipknot interview in it.
I just want to illustrate as well, by the way, that my first Korn experience was Korn on the cover mount cassette.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, exactly. This is the generation gap that we have. But yeah, like that led me down reading Kerrang and getting into heavy music and stuff like that because I remember I saw Got the Life video on the chart show on CBBC on ITV on a Sunday and I was like, what the hell is that? And it was on, you know, 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon and this is the beginning of, you know, nu metal coming to the mainstream and I saw that and I was like, okay, I like this music because it's weird and loud and different to Oasis.
You love a slap bass.
And I mean, that click.
That click, that man. Click. That click.
So, what are the albums we're going to talk about?
Well, we've all picked an album each, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fight in the corner for System of a Down's Toxicity.
Yeah, I think it was rigged that you got that anyway.
I said it first. I literally it first.
Chris. Guys, I've got an idea. Let's pick an album. System of a Down
Toxicity. He did say it first and you went, oh, okay, cool. Chris, what's yours?
Right. I mean, how many choices did you guys veto that I tried to pick for this? Well, and I would have picked System of a Down's first album, to be fair, given the scarcity of good options here. It's a genre of short straws. It really is a genre of short straws, man. But I've gone for Slipknot's debut album because I had fond memories of it. We'll get to that.
Nostalgia, okay, is fucking dangerous, man.
And I'm going to go for Korn. Because Korn are like the definitive new metal band, I think. They didn't maybe sell as many records as Slipknot, blah, blah, blah. Or Limp Bizkit, and they weren't as heavy as some, but
they're heavier.
Like, I think they're the most influential throughout, and they define that sound because they never fucking diverge from it. They've just been Korn, and they are just nu metal.
What album are you doing by Korn?
Yeah, what album? Yeah,
people are going to disagree with me on this, but I'm going to go for Issues,
including me, because I think you should have done Life is Peachy.
I really do like Life is Peachy.
I think you should have went with Follow the Leader.
I think Follow the Leader has their best tracks on it, but it's also really patchy.
It's very patchy.
Yeah. I like Korn. Korn's the one that set the whole fucking genre off, so it's like the fucking starting point.
Slim Pickens, really.
But,
good record. Why did we say to
Untouchables is the most expensive record, if we're talking about that. They spent something like £3 million on that album.
Shit.
And it's fucking awful.
And the cover's horrendous.
I remember when it... I know, it just looks like poo.
Korn have some of the
just
worst, the worst covers. I mean, Life is Peachy is a good cover, but they have some of the worst covers.
I know, and that's the one that they didn't use their logo on.
How do you spend $3 million on an album? How?
That's Guns N' Roses.
I know.
That took years, though. That's just spunking cash away, like... It took them 2 years to record an album that cost $3 million. How the fuck do you do that?
I have no idea.
What are you recording with?
I know.
More to the point, how do you do that and still have it sound like that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was very clear shit. It was like having glass sewers. You know, you could just see everything perfectly as it flew down.
What going for.
Yeah. But because I chose that, and I didn't choose any of the other Korn albums. We are not choosing Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory, which is the best selling.
Which I thought David had chosen.
But I mean, that's a
much to your anger.
I remember it's
because I had to take time to learn about them.
It's a good
against my will.
It's a good pop record.
It's a fantastic pop record.
To be fair, I did say that we were doing this to a few people, and they all said, "Well, you're doing Hybrid Theory," and I was like, "Nah."
Yeah, so I feel kind of contrary for not doing it, but I also feel like Korn are the defining band.
I would like to interject at this point and say that since I'm not going to get the opportunity to use it later, Linkin Park's name is only spelt that way because they wanted a domain name and Linkin Park was gone.
Yeah, that's fine.
That is cool. Everything you need to know about
they
that
were ahead
band.
Of the game. That was 2001.
Yeah. Less I hear, the less you say. You'll find that.
Also, there was a lot of shit around about the time saying that they might be manufactured. It was only for Kerrang, actually.
Yeah, but that's only because they advertised for a singer.
The record label set them up with Chester Bennett, and on vocals, they got rid of a guy before him, the other three. And then they automatically got a deal when that guy was promoted to head of their subsequent label.
They also survived. They survived nu metal, and they still were like selling out stadiums and stuff like that in America.
I like to think of them as the American Lost Prophets.
You shouldn't do that. I mean, mention Lost Prophets, and there's actually one of the things that we should speak about. There's a very...
Well, an elephant in the room.
Apart from that side of things, but there's an absolute like lack, whenever anybody speaks about this through on our music, there's a huge lack of any British nu metal bands.
Although there are definitely some.
Yeah, Earth Tone 9.
So Earth Tone 9, great. Although, I mean, they
not
sounded more like Tool by their third record. I see that. But then there was like Number One Son, I think.
1 minute of Silence for Irish.
1 minute. Oh, yeah, that's right. No, and I think the singer was from Gibraltar, maybe.
Skindred.
Good trivia.
Skindred. Oh, fuck, who else? Breed 77.
Oh, shit, man. Yeah.
I mean, let's not fuck around here, though. And I can tell you from having been in a band from 2000 to 2008, they were a shitload of British metal bands.
Yeah, exactly.
British new metal bands.
Not that many.
Never broke through, man.
Phony.
Yeah. There were a lot of them, man. The scene at the time was utterly swamped with them, especially in the more provincial towns. Like, see outside of like Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, not Edinburgh was bad for it. Edinburgh was a huge new metal scene. But in some of the smaller towns, and I'm sure it was the same across Britain, and I'm sure it was probably the same across Europe, the smaller towns, you would go to like community centres and there were like kids playing basses that were almost vertical and spiky guitars and had dreadlocks and baggy trousers. And
little
the scene
soul patches.
It was just clogged with all of that stuff. Like
Psychedelic, which had a BBC documentary.
Oh, I don't know.
That was a thing. I've seen that.
Kill to This. I think we're the defining British nu metal band. Because they were on every single bill that ever toured the UK. They supported every new metal band. They had the two, which was Roman numerals in the middle, and they were fucking awful, like so bad, like really, really terrible. They had no positive things about them at all.
Yeah. So let's get into these records.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Oh, wait.
One last bit of trivia.
Okay.
I love it. It's one of my favourite bits of new metal trivia. So after the new metal thing, there was a band called the Icarus Line. From the States, and they had a record label called Buddyhead. And
really
Buddy,
good record, really good band.
Icarus Line had an album called Mono, which I think we'll hopefully cover at one point, because I love it. But very kind of noise punk, kind of Iggy Pop type thing, like bits of Fugazi and stuff. Anyway, regardless, Icarus Line were getting courted by Fred Durst, because Fred Durst obviously one of those guys that wanted to remain cool by kind of following the zeitgeist, right? So he summoned them in to a meeting at his offices to try and sign them. And they turned up early. Well, I think they actually turned up on time, but Fred Durst being Fred Durst, they wanted to kind of do that thing of keeping them waiting and swan into the room. And so they were just there for fucking shits and giggles, because Buddyhead was notorious for doing loads of like really guerrilla pranky sort of stuff. Uh-huh. And when they were in his office, they noticed that he had a glass cabinet which had his red caps from special events. Yeah. And he had them next to like a photo. So they had the red cap where he was at the MTV Awards with Britney Spears or whatever he went on a date with her. I think he was dating for a while, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, so Icarus Line broke into that cabinet and stole at least one, I think maybe a couple of the caps, and then made off with it and were gone before Durst even came into the meeting. And then later that day started getting like threats on their answer machine about what he was going to do to them, and they sold the caps and gave all the money to charity and an auction.
Yeah.
But Durst started, like when they went public with it, Durst started leaving them like hate messages, and then they published all the messages on their website, buddyhead.com at the time. So there you go. Sorry, I just wanted to shoehorn that in.
I just remembered this. So my old band that's been mentioned a million times in high school, we were in Kerrang in Scum Scene, unsigned bit.
Yeah.
And like there was something, I can't remember what we said, but we were like kind of weird. We're kooky guys. We have a teddy bear called Casey Chaos.
Wow.
Because for some reason we
act that wasn't eligible for new metal.
Because we're not on new metal, man.
Yeah, and we hate Fred Durst. Because Fred Durst was like a figurehead of hatred amongst legitimate music fans.
Legitimate new metal fans.
Yeah, exactly. And he tainted America's Princess Britney Spears as well. Like, I mean, that's how big it was as well. He's going out with Britney Spears.
That's fucking nuts.
But anyway, we started getting fucking post, like fan mail.
Actual post?
Real letters. To my parents' house, because I was only fucking 15 at the time. And for some reason, the address was in Kerrang. And they sent us letters, and one of them included some girl from Doncaster had created a fucking A4 sheet of paper with a photo of Fred Durst in the middle, and it was like a dartboard, and it was a Fred Durst spittoon, and it had scores and everything, and so you could spit Fred Durst's face, and then like it was a whole game. And that's how much Fred Durst was hated.
That's pretty insane.
Yeah. Man, she was really on message with you guys. Yeah. I thought you were going to say she sent you like a threat.
No, she like sent us a whole game to spit on Fred Durst's face. Created that, crafted it.
My new metal story involves a band who formed when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And are still a band to this day. They're still playing new metal. It still exists.
Could be so many.
Still play gigs. And that's just so fucking strange, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't know what to do if I saw new metal band right now. Like if I went to Block and there was a new metal band playing, I'd be like, it's very odd. Yeah, it's very strange.
You've asked me a bunch of times to get a new metal band for your DJ night.
Yeah, that's true.
Five Finger Death Punch, mate. They sold out Hydro, it's not gonna happen.
We should also give an honourable mention to all the new metal bands that like to use numbers,
mm-hmm.
and all the new metal bands that like to fuck about with the spelling of their name, especially the word sick and ill and things like that.
Mm-hmm. That's how you do it. That's how you stand out.
All right, so System of a Down, Toxicity.
Am I starting this?
Yeah, you're starting it, man.
Okay, cool. Well, I suppose the elephant in the room is why didn't I pick the first record?
The elephant in my room.
Yeah, I think this record's got better songs on it. I think this is when they actually became better songwriters. They were thinking more about the music, thinking about how they can construct, I guess, poppy songs. I mean, let's make no bones about it. There are songs on this record which are custom made to be played in rock radio. They're built exactly for that. This is the second System of a Down record that I heard, but this is the first one that I actually wanted to listen to more. I actually got a bootleg copy of this in school for like £3
fucking on CD, CDR.
On CDR, yeah.
Yes, you ruined thing. The music industry.
And I fucking played the shit out of it. I know the Stone of the Wall was playing in the flat the
you
other day.
You know, it was the album after that you were meant to steal.
Exactly. Ah, yes. Hey.
Ding ding. But
I played it in the house recently. I was just full of fucking. So I still knew every word, every fucking lick, all of it, man. I think this is the best songs that they'd written at that point. Later records have.
I disagree respectfully.
See,
I think this see is for better me, songwriting, man. For sure.
I don't know. Like the production is obviously a lot clearer.
Mick Rubin.
Yeah, exactly. It's so fat. Like they just so many layers of guitars. Mm. Prison Song is fucking great, and like Deer Dance.
Yep.
And it's got some really great tracks on it. And then that sort of airy fairy bits that they do, like at the end of Science, I really enjoyed that. But this was a record. I remember I got the two albums on the same birthday, and Toxicity was the one that became like a party album for like me and all my pals, and like it would go on at my friend Claire's house, and it would just, you know, that would be one of the records that we all just loved as a like a communal record. But then System of a Down was the one that I listened to on my own, and I loved as an album in itself. It wasn't like a sing-along one, but like it's, I don't know, I just loved the energy of it, like the weird ideas on it. I love like Sweet Pea and I love The Devil and
yeah. See, like, I think like with System of a Down, like the album, the debut album, I feel like it was a much more bold step because nu metal at the time was quite apolitical. It was quite stodgy. It was quite grim. And that was like totally whimsical at points. Some of the kind of, you know, vocal things that he does and stuff, it's ridiculous, but like it worked.
It was kind of cartoony.
Yeah, cartoony. It was punkier. You know, it was a bit edgier. There was something quite raw about it. And they're also a band that seemed to get a little bit of like respect and legitimacy from people that were otherwise a bit cynical about nu metal in general. Even when you saw them touring with like Dillinger Escape Plan and stuff like that, there was a sense that they were a little bit more of an authentic band. The second album, they'd proven that worked. So the second album wasn't as big a daring step. I think what they did with the second album, and I'll totally give you this, it's the singles album. So obviously you had Toxicity, you had Chop Suey, and you had Aerials, and they were all big singles, big sing-along singles. I cry when angels deserve to die in my self-righteous suicide. And they didn't have that in the first album, apart from maybe Spiders?
Sugar.
And Sugar.
Sugar, yeah.
Yeah, Spiders and Sugar, I thought were like, and Spiders kind of did the same thing as Aerials, really. It was the kind of moody one. But like, that and Sugar were the sing along tunes on that one. But they improved the sing along factor and the production value, and the kind of, I suspect there was a bit of a record label involvement in that. It's like, guys, you could be huge if you would just write some more singles. So I kind of feel like the first album's a wee bit more naive and a wee bit more sincere. Like, I get your point regarding it's not as iconic. I do think the actual album tracks in it are stronger. I don't think the album tracks on the second album are as strong. I think some of them are pretty cringeworthy.
But some of them are. There's some songs that shouldn't be on this. I think
it's over long,
minutes,
isn't it?
It's too long for 44 minutes.
Yeah, I think
minutes,
it should be
insane.
A 10 or 11 track album.
X can go.
Yeah. Jet Pilot.
Bounce can go as well.
Yeah, Bounce is shit.
What is the deal with Science, by the way? Is that not a creationist thing?
It's a creationist song, yeah. It's science has failed the world, so it's like basically back in creationism, yeah.
No, is it? I always thought it was more about like misuse of science.
No, it's a song about creationism. It's like it's about like creation versus evolution.
See, and that's kind of that thing I'm saying where there was like kind of weird wokeness to the metal scene, the new metal scene, that I think it leaves a wee bit of a weird taste in the mouth. I'd actually quite like System of a Down. I'll give you that. I'm shitting on this pretty hard, but System of a Down are probably the band after Deftones that I think were the most credible in terms of just being a band,
because they moved away from this on the next couple of records, like Hypnotized and Mesmerized. They're not new metal records at all. They're hard rock records. I mean, they're even in East.
And I've honestly lost track of them.
They play in E flat, like they're playing E flat, they're not even D tuned anymore. Do you know what I mean? And the guitars are super trebly as well, which can be quite grating a lot of the time. But they were able to still be quite heavy despite that.
And Serge Tankian started doing all the kind of like Armenian sort of mm-hmm. Eastern European yeah. folk music, didn't he?
I mean, he's doing there are elements of that on Toxicity. And he apparently in the liner notes I was reading, like he's responsible for
liner notes, yeah. liner notes,
liner notes, same thing, doesn't matter.
They're just all very straight,
yeah. But like he's responsible, or he's been credited as doing all the string arrangements as well, which I think is really interesting, which he might take forward in his solo career. Like,
it is a very progressive record from that genre,
like I think it's untouchable
yeah, by
for
those
that
standards,
genre.
Yeah,
and also. It is one of the ones, I don't know, if you're all fucking driving to the beach and you put it in on in the car, everybody, dum, everybody knows it, and then you can pretty much sing all the way through, skipping a couple of tracks. Yeah. I mean, it's a classic nu metal record. More wood for their fires, loud neighbors, flashlight reveries caught in the headlights of a truck.
I think out of the records we've chosen, out of all the new metal records I think that are out there, this is probably the most accessible one and probably the best written one, I think, songwriting wise, certainly in terms of popular appeal.
Yeah, it's just got some filler in it.
It's better songs. I mean, you could argue that Limp Bizkit are better at writing singles, and definitely they are, if you like that kind of music, but these are just more well-crafted bits of music, I think.
I mean, it's definitely a better album than either Limp Bizkit album.
Any.
Yeah, the but two singles were always smash hits because they knew how to fucking write a riff and a chorus. Like,
as a numpty, I did listen to $3 Bill Y'all quite a bit.
It was all right, actually.
It's actually
Cover
a
of Faith
record.
Is great.
Yeah. Cover of Faith is amazing.
But it's before I knew what was happening.
Counterfeit's a cracker of a song still.
Yeah, yeah, I like Counterfeit.
Really well.
I think Significant Other would be quite an interesting instrumental record if it didn't have fucking Fred Durst just being a fucking moron on it. Like, his lyrics are just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, there's something really nice and naive about Significant Other. It just sounds like a, like, boys having fun.
Dishbags.
And it's got, like, weird...
Dishbags.
Sounds like a frat party.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
But, like, there's some, like, really cool riffs on that record.
And Chocolate Starfish is him trying to be interesting but failing miserably.
Wes Borland tried so hard to get taken seriously as a guitarist.
Yeah,
well.
I know.
Because he's
a
fucking cracking guitar
yeah,
player.
Yeah, but
man.
What was that band that he formed after it? The dog something?
Yeah, there was a dog one. And then he always said that he was going to form this death black metal band called Goat. Something Goat Horror or something like that.
There was loads of chat as well that he was that guy Buckethead for ages.
Yeah.
People thought that it was him.
No.
But people got kind of carried away with him and he wasn't actually as good as people thought.
But he's still great
guitarist. Like 50 albums.
Buckethead, he really wanted to be seen as legitimate in the context of knowing that his band were cash cow but a fucking joke.
He wore a monkey's face and contact lenses.
And body paint.
It's kind of weird that we're going to do a new metal thing here and we're not going to have a Limp Bizkit album.
A Linkin Park album
or a Deftones album. That's pretty crazy.
I mean, Limp Bizkit are like the most throwaway band on earth. They know that now. Like, even when they play shows, they're doing it for the party factor.
Do you know what I listened to the other night when we were talking about this? Gold Cobra. That was the last Limp Bizkit album.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was hilarious. Do you know what? I played it and I was like, that's quite a cool guitar riff. Mm-hmm. And then by track three, I was like, oh, I need to turn this off. There's only so much of that one. Oh, no, just really bad.
Gold.
I totally acknowledge the iconic status of that System of a Down album. It is huge. It sums up a lot. It sums up the kind of counterculture thing as well. It did actually have some really good songs in it. Like, they were good songs. Like, there were good songs in there. I just felt that the first album was more interesting and a bit more unexpected.
So, do you want to tell us why you think Slipknot is better than Toxicity?
Am I going next? I definitely actually don't think that it's better than that, although I was quite nostalgic about it.
It's a killer, man.
The first Slipknot album, I had a lot of time for it. It was a shot in the arm, and mm-hmm. it was like much darker than the other new metal stuff.
So heavier.
Talking about. Yeah, so much heavier. It had like the drum and bass breaks and stuff mm-hmm. early on. Is it Sick? It starts with a wee drum and mm-hmm. bass break at mm-hmm. start.
No, it's Eyeless.
It doesn't matter. Who mm-hmm. cares? I'm not going to get it in, am I? So it had the kind of creepy vocal sample at the start. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole thing I think is shit. Like that thing. Mm-hmm. It had loads of like little kind of spooky, weird things. And whilst the mask thing was pretty douchebaggy as well, it was like...
But fuck, as a 15-year-old, it was so exciting,
yeah,
man.
I wasn't 15, yeah. though.
I was just so excited because I read about them before I heard them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck are
they
this band?
They were phenomenon, man.
They smell jars full of dead birds before they go on stage.
Yeah,
they
what do, a oh, fucking bunch like, of idiots, man.
No, I was so excited. And then when I bought the record and that, you know, the whole thing, that yeah, and it just built in and it was so chaos.
To be fair, like the first... maybe five or six tracks were like pretty strong.
It's front loaded like fuck that.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. Yeah. But I had selectively omitted so many things from that album that see going back, holy shit, they did not age well. They did not age well. Like, I took the tracks right and I divided them into categories. My categories were good, cringeworthy, and shitter.
Fuck's sake. You're so miserable.
Like, to be fair, Sick and Eyeless, really good.
Surfacing's like, alright.
I love Surfacing.
Surfacing's good. Yeah, I actually quite like Tattered and Torn. Thought it was pretty weird.
I like Tattered and Torn.
Prosthetics is pretty good. And that's where they get into their kind of weird, drawn out, creepy stuff.
Which they don't get. Yeah, you didn't listen to the version with Purity on it, did you?
No, I didn't listen to the version.
Purity's a really good song. Really good. And it's got like that whip sample on it, and it's like really good chorus.
And also, I thought Diluted was all right. And yep. Scissors is a pretty cool
intro. Oh, fuck it. Scissors has got that massive riff.
Cringeworthy, though. Wait and Bleed is pretty fucking cringeworthy now. And Spit It Out. Is
honking.
It's honking.
I would say
that is brutal.
Spit It Out. Spit It Out is the first track I heard.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is amazing. I am on board with this now. But like, listen to Spit It Out now is absolutely fucking dreadful.
The shitter category. Me Inside is a total donkey of a song. What has got me bleeding, claustrophobic scars, severed me from all emotion. Life is just too fucking hard. Liberate is a total donkey of a song, and the absolute pits is a song called No Life.
Oh my god,
yeah. I've been crying about this since you told me to do this, man. And if you listen back to it, it doesn't even, I mean, it is Limp Bizkit. It doesn't even sound heavier than Limp Bizkit.
It was just a new metal song. Wish I keep when you need him. You ain't shit to the battle on the best friend. The maniac psycho. Gonna scream this, but then I'll care for living. Minutes when it just scare me so. Just enough to fuck me up again and again. All my fists out of cell. But I'm back to fuck on up, cause this is now. Because like you listen to, I don't know, Surfacing or Sick, and they're metal. Fucking metal as fuck. And that's what they do well. That's what Slipknot are a really good heavy metal band.
They moved, like, they had
but they were not a good new metal band.
They were canny enough to
ironic.
Move away from this shit. Yeah, absolutely. But this, and there's a song called Only One as well, which is fucking dreadful as well. Like, another super rapped, like hip-hoppy thing. And it really didn't suit the band. It doesn't suit their image. It doesn't suit their talents. It just does not suit anything.
So basically, this, as a new metal record, the worst bits about it are when they do new metal, and the best bits are when they just do metal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how this album is defined. Yeah. So if you want to choose this as your new metal record, that would be weird.
I think there's a lot of people, when we had that post online, were talking about this album as well, and I really do think, like, honestly, if you go back and listen to this album now, there's a really great EP... Or a much shorter album.
Yeah, there's like eight, nine tracks.
There's 4 to 6 tracks that need to be deleted from the annals.
There's also
history.
Like bonus tracks that they recorded that are maybe better. Or like Eeyore was the really fucking fast hardcore like death metal track. That was the secret song at the end. Remember CDs having secret tracks? You just don't get that on fucking Spotify now. That was a belter.
See what Iowa in Volume 3, by the way. Yeah, you're right about the secret track thing. But see what Iowa in Volume 3. Did they give up on the rapping by Iowa?
Yeah, it was nothing. Well, I don't know. I suppose you could argue that
there's a few bits
of the Maggots has kind of got a bit of rapping on it.
Do you know what? Like, Slipknot were one of my favourite bands in that time, but then just by the time Volume 3 came out, I gave up, didn't give a shit. Even though they then had some, like, decent singles.
They had a lot of good singles.
Duality.
This is the thing, right? So, like, that is the elephant in the room there, man. Duality is a brilliant fucking single. Duality is the best single to come out of that era of music, I think. It is fucking tremendous. Yeah. also have to admit
his voice is so different on that record as well.
Yeah, it is definitely. Because he started doing the was it Stone Sour or something?
No, he'd always been doing that.
Yeah,
that was was in that before.
Yeah, but he was obviously
got allowed
into
to do
vocal
it.
More. I mean, and one of the things, by the way, that I really liked warmed to about Slipknot was in their early interviews. They were asked, "Can you cite the albums that made you want to do this?" And there was the usual Pantera ones. But their main album was Bleach by Nirvana, and I was a Nirvana kid.
But you can get that because it's got that groove on some of their riffs.
Yeah, so like Corey Taylor was like, by the time I got in there, he was like, we were all really talking about how much we'd loved Nirvana, the early Nirvana, the sludgy Melvins-y era Nirvana.
Like, there's some riffs on Slipknot that if you take them away from a click track, they're kind of like Floyd the Barber or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That part of it did give me a little bit more time for them. And Duality is a fucking beast, but I do wonder... Duality is so good compared to the stuff that came around it, if it was written for them. Like, I don't mean entirely for them, but if it was one of those things where it's like, guys, we've got a lot of money sunk into you, you've still got a big fan base, we really need you to have a Toxicity-type moment.
But they had My Plague from Iowa on the Resident Evil soundtrack. That was huge.
Which is weird. Like,
yeah, but it's no Duality, man.
No,
Heretic Anthem as well, it's no Duality, man.
Iowa, I loved Iowa. I remember the day it came out, I was so fucking excited. And it's a metal album, but it's when they try to go mainstream that they lose it, because they're a good metal band. And My Plague is one of the tracks that I would just delete off that album,
even though it's the biggest single.
Yeah. I thought Left Behind's all right. It's quite like the guitar riff, but you know, it's the tracks like Disaster Piece of People Equal Shit. Disaster Piece is a fucking death metal track.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, like we said, when they got away from the rap rock,
the tropes of the genre,
they got better. Can I just highlight as well one thing that's been really not sitting well with me, right? So I had to research this, right? So this Slipknot by Slipknot was not Slipknot's first album. Mm-hmm. Slipknot had one, arguably two albums prior to that, right? But if you go to Wikipedia, it says Slipknot by Slipknot's their debut album, and it's so clearly part of a kind of backwards engineering by the record label.
No, but it's like Pantera as well. Like, Pantera's debut album is Cowboys from Hell, but they were a band.
But it's also that the record label desperately it wants to construct the mythology of the band as in they were good, they hit the ground running.
But bands still do that. Like, I'm not going to name who it is, but a big Scottish act a couple of years ago got in touch with me through my online blog stuff and like asked if we could remove a video that they'd done because they were going to release a new album or their debut album, and the stuff that they'd done before was so different and they didn't want to associate it, so they were like cleansing the pool before they then became this new cool act.
Yeah, that's the thing though. That's when you start to see though that they've been so heavily image managed, and that's why I'm suspicious about where Duality came from in the context of that band. Because if their label is trying to rewrite history, so the album was Mate Feed Kill Repeat or MFKR, motherfucker. Like, and that came out in 96 and is fucking dog shit. And you can listen to it.
There's some weird like jazz interludes, and it's all
It's absolutely bogging. And it's you can hear the whole thing on YouTube. I encourage you to go and listen to it.
I had it on MP3 on my Rio 32 megabyte MP3 player.
And also,
yeah, yeah, I had to change it every time.
Yeah, so they will not want us telling you to go and listen to this, but please go and listen to it. So after that as well came an album called Crows, C-R-O-W-Z, as is the want of new metal bands. But Crows never actually got released, and it kicks about in bootlegs for like super fans. And there's a bunch of tracks like Wait and Bleed and Prosthetics were on that got re-recorded.
Yeah, and fuck.
But basically,
there's one track on that I can't remember, but it's like got a sample. I just remember I had it on my MP3 player as well, and it goes the riff, and then it's a sample from a movie, and he's like, I think that guy's gonna fuck that little dog. And then it's into the riff again, and I was like, this is a terrible song, but I like that sample.
They were like, what does this track need? Or do you think they wrote the track around the sample, or do you think they had the song?
I mean, who knows?
They were like, guys, we need something for this gap.
Either way, they nailed that gap.
Gordon Ramsay. It's raw, it's fucking raw. Anyway,
Crows got them attention from major labels.
Yeah, well, they ended up, rather than releasing it, shopping it about as a full length demo.
Yeah, give us money.
And then Corey Taylor was in there.
And then they managed to get Ross Robinson to come and produce it. We haven't mentioned Ross Robinson, which is weird.
We haven't mentioned any producers.
He was a kingmaker of new metal.
He produced Korn, and then he went on and he did so much stuff.
At the drive-in,
I know.
Yeah, Relationship of Command. Mm-hmm. It's easy to forget. how engineered that was, because that was Glass them show. Applying. The Glasgow and At The Drive-In were put through the same machine, the same hit machine that some of the new metal bands before them had been put through.
But what he managed to do with Glassjaw and At The Drive-In and Slipknot was capture that live madness put a shine to it, but it also had an energy to it.
Yeah, I mean, he an excellent producer, obviously, but also very much somebody that was able to execute what the record labels wanted to happen with this record in order, as they saw it, for it to succeed.
Yeah.
And he seemed pretty good at his job.
But anyway, such a man of his time.
I just want to fucking nail my colours to the mast here. No, Slipknot by Slipknot is not their debut album. And at the very least, you should acquaint yourself with how fucking bad their debut album is just to fucking give two fingers up to the record label that thought they could rewrite history by omitting it.
Can I just say that I think that Slipknot have a really great greatest hits collection.
Oh, I agree. It's
pretty much untouchable, to be honest.
Their best 18 songs is better than a lot of bands' best 18 songs.
Psychosocial as well is
that's a banger.
From All Hope Is Gone. That's very similar to Duality.
Yeah.
And its construction as well.
I was kind of wondering about this, right? So New Metal's, because Slipknot's kind of hokey sort of costume thing. And by the way, they were really, really fucking good live. I saw Slipknot at the Barras, and two of them set each other on fire, and the DJ did the front flip off the PA, knocked a girl out with his foot, and then the crowd attacked them. And I was like, to be fair, I'm getting my money's worth. that was pretty good. Saw pretty much the songs I wanted to see. But see, in amongst all that kind of hokey imagery that they did with their masks and stuff, do you think they were just like a modern version of the Misfits, or do you think there was something, another level of false about them?
See, I never really got the sense, maybe I was sucked in by the marketing, but I never really got the sense they were all that false. I think what had happened is they'd engineered a lot of the stuff they wanted to do before label came calling.
I think that's naive, man.
There's a huge thing about how Mushroomhead are raging about the fact that Slipknot basically stole their idea.
Fuck, I wonder if that's just a bluff.
But I mean, the hilarious thing is Mushroomhead were awful.
Yeah, really bad.
So bad.
What about fucking Mudvayne, man? Mudvayne fucking went.
Oh, that's another album, by the way. LD50 is a fucking great album.
A lot of people gave that a shout.
Yeah.
Dig's a pretty cool track.
Dig's great. Nothing again, Ed Gain, Ed Gain.
Oh, clever.
Death Blooms, it was a patchy album, but some really great tracks that were way more progressive than a lot of new metal.
Actually, we did say as well we were going to touch on this, but it was interesting about new metal how such was its gravity and the sheer amount of money orbiting around it at the time that it drew in otherwise large celestial bodies to its genre. So you had bands like Machine Head who went in and did the Burning Red and stuff.
Yeah, Slayer. Yeah, Diabolus and Musica definitely had some new metal, and it was awful. That's their worst record, definitely.
That is bringing the mountain to Muhammad.
And Fear Factory, Digimortal as well.
St. Anger.
I suppose to some extent, yeah.
St. Anger. Metallica's best record. Yep.
We'll get to that.
that's a fucking...
I never,
That's a special that I never saw.
I mean, it totally is. But but what's funny is The Burning Red and Digimortal and Diabolus and Musica.
Supercharged as well.
These bands' worst albums. they tried new metal and it just browned the water.
Just, the way that Cavalera, for example, left Sepultura and then Soulfly was new metal effectively, a kind of new metal version of Sepultura.
But Roots is probably a new metal record.
Album, I'd say,
that's one that I think probably would have deserved a shout.
Yeah.
Isn't as entirely awful as some of the others, but it's not as good as Zen and Sepultura did before it.
No.
The reason we couldn't pick it is because we all pick a Sepultura album, which is superior.
Proper mention, yeah. So, Dave, let's stop fucking about here and talk about Korn.
All right, so Korn are the defining new metal band.
This is why I'm here.
Because they made that brown, sludgy noise their own.
Yeah,
But you know, fucking hell, when Korn's first record came out, people were really fucking excited by them because it didn't sound like anything. Mm. And they didn't look like anything, and at the time, I can tell you firsthand
that my school was saturated with fans of Stone Fucking Roses.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It was just all baggy Mancunian shit everywhere, and it was fucking nightmarish. And so they were part of a movement that was a welcome breath of fresh air, even if it was just to be like, yes, I know Kurt Cobain killed himself. No, that doesn't mean it's okay to listen to Charlatans.
Yeah.
Now we've got something fucking else. Albeit it was a bit of a false dawn.
Yeah.
And Korn, the album, Korn, I mean, it very much defined a sound that all these bands then took from, that sort of down-tuned stuff. And like, Korn as a record is patchy, but it's really interesting. And like, I can imagine how fucking exciting it was to hear it. You know, like, Blind is still a fucking banger of a track. Just that riff.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing riff.
The opening to it is cool. Like, see, it's like a very iconic opening. You know. Like,
it's the opening of that genre.
Is it opening a genre? Yeah, you're right, actually. It's just like, it's literally like, here's a new thing, this is going to be with us for 10 fucking years.
Yeah, exactly. And then Life is Peachy didn't get the critical acclaim.
I think it's actually, like, I have to admit, Life is Peachy, I really enjoyed at the time. I've not gone back. I can't bring myself to go back. I'm pretty sure Adidas is fucking humming and
yeah, there's some, like, bad tracks
all day
on it.
I Dream About
and,
Sex. And any band that's sponsored by competing tracksuit companies who switched from Adidas to Puma.
I know.
For fuck's sake. It's not like they're athletes. They're fat bastards. It's fucking I mean, it is so absurd. I don't know your fucking name, so what? Let's fuck.
But of course, he was also, he had his bagpipes on his gilt as well, he's a Scottish guy.
I fucking hate bagpipes so much.
There was a video that went viral from the Lad Bible today, which was a guy bungee jumping whilst playing the bagpipes, and it sounds exactly like the opening track from Issues.
I just thought you were going to say it sounds exactly like bagpipes played normally.
Jesus, it's brutal.
And then Follow the Leader was the big commercial album that then took them to the mainstream.
And in the videos, you could see it just in the money that was spent on them in the videos for Follow the Leader and stuff.
And it's the one,
the marketing.
It's the one with the singles that people go back to.
Freak on a Leash
and Got the Life.
It's got Farside on it. It's got Fred Durst on it. It's got it's got a couple of really big rappers on it. There's Method Man's on it.
There's like, I know,
who was it that had the guy from Orgy on their album as well?
I'm pretty sure he's on the record too.
Yeah, because I thought he was really
good. Yeah, they all did bits. They all went in and out of each other's albums. Yeah. There's so many Orgy, guest spots all the time.
I have the first two Orgy albums.
There were two albums?
Jesus Christ.
I think there's been about four.
I thought it was just the one that Blue Monday on it.
It's Candy Ass and then the one afterwards, which was...
Oh, that was it, Candy Ass. Really, and they all wore like white leather suits and like blue hair, and they're awful.
They're still Orgy.
Probably hanging out with that guy Peter Dave School.
And for many folk, Follow the Leaders, like maybe the defining Korn record, because it was the biggest. I remember it had the first 12 tracks were all 4 seconds long in silence. So it started on track 13. That's pretty cool, isn't it, guys? That's pretty cool.
That's forward.
Unlucky for some, as in the entire world.
Yeah. It's far too long, that record. It's so long.
I know, it is really long. Like, there's some decent tracks on it, album tracks, like Seed is actually quite good, but then there's some shite as well. Fucking Cameltosis.
Children of the Corn has fucking Ice Cube on it.
Children of the Corn.
There's a song called Cameltosis.
Yeah.
that is new metal right
then there.
That is new metal.
Dead Bodies Everywhere.
Which is actually pretty
good. That had some good riff. And then,
Dead Bodies Everywhere.
The problem is, Fred Durst ruined that fucking album. Because it had that absolute abortion of a song, I don't know the family. Now I'm a weird kid, suck my dick kid, like your daddy did. Who the fuck you think you're talking to? I'm known for eating little whiny chumps like you. Whatever. All up in my face with that. Are you ready? But how about Apoptosis. And it's Fred Durst and Jonathan Davis like rapping verse about, and they're just slagging each other off.
All in the family.
And I really liked that track when I heard it, because so I was a small child that thought the word dick was funny. But fucking hell, it's awful. That is a bad track.
I don't think
track.
That album needed Fred Durst to ruin it, but you're right. That didn't make it better.
It's not a bad album, and it's got some great tracks on it. But like,
so let's talk about artwork and then your album as well.
Todd McFarlane, the guy who created Spawn, he did the artwork for that record.
That was the animation as well, wasn't it?
And the animation.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was bad, but nowhere near as bad. Before you even listen to a tune in Issues, nowhere near as bad as the cover.
Hey, I was a competition winner.
Yeah, I was a fan. That was fan service. There's a lot of fan service around Issues.
Yeah. I remember when the call for that competition went out. Yeah, they got fucking thousands of entries. I just sent a wee photo of my bum.
Would have been better.
But man, for me, Issues is like their most whole record. And it's, I don't know if it's a good album.
No,
but
it's not.
No,
I can also say
I got it. My parents got it for my Christmas, along with two other CDs, U2, The Best of 1980, 1990, and Cars, Talk on Corners. So that was the three that I was faced with that Christmas.
And we decided to start a music podcast.
No, so that meant I listened to fucking Korn Issues for 2 years nonstop. I remember, oh, what was I playing? I also got a game for Christmas. I got World of Warcraft. No, it would have been Warcraft 2 or something. It was way before it was online. Yeah. So I remember clicking the orcs while listening to Korn Issues. Those are the days.
It's a fucking midden of an album.
It's so dull.
It is a dirge. Dull. It is just fucking sticky and dark and dank.
Falling Away From Me, great track.
Yeah. I stuck in my head regularly. Absolute belter. I've not heard that in about 10 years before this podcast.
Like Trash is a really good song.
Yeah. Somebody Somewhere is pretty decent.
Somebody Somewhere, Beg For Me is actually pretty cool. Wake Up's a fucking belter of a track. That was the first song on that first Kerrang CD that I ever had, and it was the CD that was in my CD player that I used as my alarm for about 2 years. So I got woken up by Korn saying Wake Up.
Wake Up's about the band, isn't it?
Yeah. He was just band, like, yeah. Come on, guys, we're losing this. Mm-hmm. Wake Up. So subtle.
And he didn't listen.
And then, Hey, Dad. I don't know. Somebody, Someone is like a good track. I don't know. I just listen to this album nonstop and I know it inside out. And to me, I know it's kind of brown and dirgy and the production's kind of fatty. But for me, it's just like going back and like lying in a big, overly washed brown duvet that's still upstairs, and it's really comfy. And like I could listen to this album straight through walking home tonight, and I would just enjoy it. And I don't know why. And I think a lot of people will have that if this was their album. You can't really be objective about it because it was the album that you just fucking listen to a lot.
It sounds like a Brendan O'Brien record. Does that make sense to you?
A what, sorry?
A Brendan O'Brien record. It sounds like one of his records. The guitars are all kind of, they're heavy but still kind of neutered sounding, like there's no real bite to them.
Yeah, it is quite sludgy.
And like, he done that Metallica records as well, yeah. He's worked on.
For many people, it's very samey, but for me, it actually works really well because it's all self-contained and it flows very well.
In the interest of consistency, though, I think there's a thing about Korn, which, you know, we were pretty hard on Descendants for being puerile grown men. I think it is perpetually off-putting about Korn. I mean, even going all the way back to the song Faggot on the first Korn album, and you're like, I mean, Jonathan Davis was notoriously a bully when he was a kid, so like, it's more likely he was the one shouting faggot than anyone else. But I think the fact that these were like fully, I mean, this is probably true of nu metal in general, especially Papa Roach, bands like that, just the fucking level of sheer self-indulgence, self-pity and whining fucking family issue pish that they made a buck off. Like the fact that they were obviously targeting angsty early teenagers and preteens. I mean, it's just like shameless fucking milking like candy from a baby. Like, let's write another album.
I mean, to be fair, I think Jonathan Davis was sexually abused as a child.
It is on that song, Daddy, on... He actually breaks down in the middle of the song on the first Korn record.
Well, yeah. He had real issues, Chris. And that's what this album is about. It's him coming to terms with his issues and the band's issues. And it's just... It just sums it up.
The worst offender is Disturbed by a good long way. I hate that band so much.
I really hate that band. Like, Voices is a track. And then what's the famous one as well?
Down With The Sickness. Down With The Sickness. Which actually has his old... No, Mommy, don't hate me, Mommy. But in it...
That's actually
in the song.
Oh, fucking hell. Disturbed, their first album had some interesting riffs on it and stuff. And then they just became bloated and awful. For that. But he... So I always hated him. He's a fucking prick.
David Drayman.
David Drainman.
Oh, wow.
With his big spikes coming out his chin. I'm a label enemy. I am your mortal enemy. My actions enemy. Make me your bitter. What a fucking tool.
Oh, I'm going to put this out there. I think results of this notwithstanding, for the sheer wealth of material and interest and cultural insight, we will probably come back to nu metal, maybe in a slightly more nuanced way. It might be more interesting to deliberately pick something that's not one of the big hitters next time and pick something that kind of was like lower down, even if it's dog shit, just to see what it says about the genre. Because there was some really interesting, odd,
some weird stuff.
Like, we spoke about the band Kitty. They were an interesting phenomenon. There'd just be some... I think there's more meat in the bone.
Sugar Coma. Anybody remember them?
Holy shit, I remember them. Absolutely. Cold? Remember Cold?
I remember Cold.
The one that you told me I couldn't do? Yeah. Cold by Cold?
Yeah.
Not 13
I just don't think
I didn't say anything
I just
that.
Don't think it's new metal.
I think... I mean, I think their subsequent albums were new metal. Then they had an
Snot.
Album called...
Remember Snot?
Snot, yeah.
Lynn Street.
Yeah,
died.
Dope, yeah. Aye.
Yeah. Static X, of course.
All right, yeah.
Like Wayne.
Winning
the wins. I think there's quite a lot of interesting things to be said about it as a subculture and a big subculture at that, especially as it kind of progressed and there was like stuff drifting about underneath the surface. It was slightly more obscure. Out of these three, it was slim fucking pickings, with Deftones out the picture and with you having picked Toxicity. And I think really the first SOAD album is the only other one that really jumps out at me. I found it really difficult. People might pick Slipknot. It's not going to be on the basis of my fucking enthusiastic defence of their case.
Maybe we should have... Maybe I should... No. I should have chosen fucking Hybrid Theory, but...
Hybrid Theory would have cruised this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not a vote then. Do you know what I mean? Maybe this is just not a vote. Maybe
no,
just,
fuck it. We're
don't
voting. We're
fucking goalposts.
Don't change just because they're voting on these three.
I just don't want to
shit
win
records.
This is the one we don't want to win.
No, it's fine.
I stand by my choice.
Go to unsungpod.com and don't vote on any vote that's not there. So none of these. Go and do it. And
but we
yourself.
Enjoy your feedback as well. Like the Facebook part has been great.
It has been really interesting. Yeah. And all the names that come out of like left field, like that suddenly you're fucking like rolling your eyes, like because somebody's told you about Power Man 5000 or American Head Charge.
Stab him, Westward.
Linea 77,
that was a super obscure one.
El Nino.
El Nino, yeah.
Some of the later period ones, some really odd.
Did you say American Head Charge?
I said that.
Yeah.
Just rattling around your brain.
Drowning Pool
was, that's like, I mean, so many of these bands were used to torture people in Guantanamo as well. Let's not forget that. But yeah, okay.
Well, I'm going to walk home and listen to Issues because it's the album that I'll go back to personally. So fuck it, that's the one I went for. Slipknot, yep, great. Toxicity, that's the one I'll probably put on at a party with all my pals.
Oh, your 16-year-old pals.
All my 16-year-old pals. Wait, my pals that have been friends since I was 16.
Is that supposed to be like Fiction of Progress? We didn't talk about Lost Prophets, which I think...
First record was definitely new metal, I think.
And
like Shinobi versus Dragon Ninja is... That's a really good new metal song.
Yeah, then they became not a new metal band on the second record and so on. But I mean, there's a couple of, I fucking loved that band when their first record came out.
Yep. But you can't listen to them now.
No, it's impossible.
Much like they Gary Clutter had some great glam record songs, but we can't listen to Gary Clutter. So
it's like in Black, is that episode Black Mirror where like you can block people? That's what happens when you try to
fuck that, you've got Burzum socks.
I don't have Burzum socks. I fucking don't listen to Burzum. I hate Burzum. I'm a man of honour.
You've just lost us so many of our alt-right listeners.
Yeah, so many.
And he says with an Emperor t-shirt, Emperor hoodie, and I'm pretty sure one of these men murdered somebody, but that's fine.
So yeah, go and vote, I guess. I mean, how's this going to work? If it's a bonus episode, people can't vote if it's just for subscribers.
It's going to go up legit eventually anyway.
Okay, so subscribers, yeah, enjoy the banner while it lasts, and then you can edit that bit out for the second
coming
around, yeah. And go and vote on the Facebook page and let us know which of these three records deserve to go in the discography.
Should we have a fourth category that's like none of the above? Or
yes, it will definitely be a none of the above option.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. Are you for real? No, that's what I was going to say. How did this generation of men, boys, men, babies, how are they going to get away? How are they going to keep getting away with the whole Me Too thing? Because that's fucking, that there's going to be a litany of bullshit that's went on.
Do you
there.
Mean like how have no new metal artists have come out
how
getting
has
fingered?
Has that not happened yet?
Yeah, that's true. That will just happen.
I'll be honest, I don't necessarily think that it's any more prevalent in new metal than it is in like pop music.
Yeah, but why? Like, I mean, it's going
maybe they were just more overt about it. Like, I watched Limp Bizkit at Woodstock 99 video.
Fuck that show, by the way. We should have spoken about that.
Yeah, and
sorry,
that
the
was
one
the one where, like,
girls
are raped
in the crowd.
Yeah, and there was an actual riot, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, there's the video of it on YouTube, and, like, there's a guy crowd surfing on, like, a bit of wood that they've ripped down. And then there's a girl on shoulders, and she's, like, just got her tits out. And then a guy just, like, grabs a tit. And then she just like puts it away. And you're like, oh yeah, just witnessed a sexual assault there, but everybody's laughing about it because it's 1999 and nobody cares.
Yeah, it's a really interesting culture that was around that. And I think it kind of, yeah, it does feed into that jock bro
totally, yeah.
culture mm-hmm. that brought out so many of the kind of worst instincts of people. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's probably true. I think actually new metal behind the scenes, I'd be skeptical if it was any worse, like I said, than pop music. I think if you start going through some of the boy bands that were successful, they've probably done some horrible fucking shit and they've just got really good.
Do you know what?
Teams.
I mean, there have been people, you know, even before this, you know, so there's like the guitarist from Static X and stuff like that. And I suppose that wasn't as big a news because you just kind of expected it. Like some of these guys were probably creepy and it's not been part of the, oh, holy fuck, it's come from this like legitimate world and like everybody's bad. It's like, oh yeah, the same percentage were dodgy in this, but it was kind of expected because they were outwardly dodgy as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think possibly what the differential is that the crowd in new metal, the culture around new metal was more overtly sexist and misogynistic and encouraged to be so. And I think like, you know, I think that's possibly part of its marketing and part of its appeal was that it gave license to just jock frat boy behaviour. Like it's frat metal.
Yeah,
like
totally.
Frat metal would probably have been a better fucking name for it. And I think the audience is probably a bigger signifier of the attitudes around it than the artists themselves. I'm sure that a huge number of them got up to all kinds of awful shit, but I'm sure, I know that a huge number of pop acts and indie acts have got up to an awful lot of shit. I just think the messages that were going out to their audiences weren't quite the same.
And the frat things.
Oh, at least they weren't hypocrites, eh?
Yeah. The frat things were interesting because I don't think, I can only speak for myself here, but like myself and the people that I knew at the time, we didn't think of it in that way when we were listening to it. Do you know what I mean? It was all about the angst.
Yeah, I know. For teenagers, it was very innocent and it was like, oh, they're speaking to, you know, Papa Roach are speaking to me because they're talking about, you know, self-harm or whatever and, or, you know, broken hearts or difficult family life, because like when you're a teenager you think all this shit is bad like and happening to you, but you viewed it with this sort of innocence and you didn't think you were getting like sold to or anything. You thought it was legit, and it's only with this sort of cynical eye
look,
Christopher's
look
at cashing, casting back. You've got two cynical eyes.
I've got three cynical eyes.
But yeah, it was fun when it was there. It was fun while it lasted.
Mm-hmm. I can't agree with that.
You weren't there, you're too old.
Fucking murder while it lasted. It's like, is this snow over here? Looking out the window, it's like that fucking snowstorm last week. It's like, oh, it's fucking snowing again. Like, oh my God, they're bringing out another album. But yeah. All right, so that was a lot of fun. That was the first mixtape episode. Yep. We're going to do one in future. Either we'll come up with what we think is an interesting subject, or maybe we can open it to the floor and see what the audience...
I think pop punk should come next.
Oh, fuck off, man. No. I can't do two such horrendous genres back to back. I really can't. Please, let's pick something with something to get
Black metal. Bands with bald frontmen.
Well, thank you very much for listening. Please go and vote on our Facebook page. We'd really appreciate that. And as ever, if you've got a second, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Gentlemen, thank you.
That was long.
That was wonderful. I enjoyed it.
That was hard, wasn't it?
No more short straws, please.
No more short straws. Okay.
Oh, I'm good. Go.
Oh,
get some baggy jeans on.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.